Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank 2021 FY earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal for an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. Please go ahead.
Good day. My name is Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. I'm the CEO of Fidelity Bank, and it is my pleasure today to welcome you to Fidelity's full year 2021 earnings call. We have uploaded the investor relations presentation on our website. I hope you have had time to look at it. Nevertheless, I will give a general overview of our performance in the review period. Before I proceed, I would like to introduce my team. With me on this call today are Kevin Ugwuoke, the Executive Director, Chief Risk Officer. Ken Opara, the Executive Director, Lagos and Southwest Directorate. Stanley Amuchie, Executive Director, Chief Operations and Information Officer. Lanre Sobhumi, the Chief Digital Officer. Victor Abejegah, the Financial Officer. Abolore Solebo, the Divisional Head, Energy and Power. Akintoye Babalola, the Treasurer. Tunjib Mustafa, the Head of Strategy. Samuel Obioha, Head of Retail Investor Relations. In the review period, there were very few positives in the macroeconomic environment. Year-on-year, the GDP grew by 4%. Oil prices rose to almost $100, and the inflation rate moderated to around 15.6% in December 2021 from an all-time high of 18% in April of the same year. However, we are still struggling with the headwinds like FX scarcity and general insecurity. Despite the challenges in the operating environment, we were resolute in the execution of our strategy. We paid particular attention to the balance sheet optimization. We also aggressively drove our digitization and automation framework. We were able to increase our digital footprint, migrated more customers to our electronic banking platforms, and automated our processes. These initiatives greatly reduced our cost to serve. During the year, we received several awards and accolades, including the fastest growing bank and MSME and Entrepreneurship Financing Bank of the Year at the 2021 Business Day Banks and Other Financial Institutions BaFin Awards. We also won the Straight-Through Processing Excellence Award from Citibank. This is the tenth consecutive year of receiving this prestigious award for efficient and error-free processing of international transactions with correspondent banks. We are pleased with the results that we're seeing, and I can assure you that we're determined to maintain this trajectory. I will now speak to the numbers. Please note that this information can be found in the investor relations presentation on our website. In 2021, we grew our gross earnings by 21.6% from 206 billion in 2020 to 250.8 billion. This was driven by 60% growth in non-interest revenue and 15.2% increase in interest and similar income. Net interest income margin came in at 4.7% from 6.3% in 2020. An average funding cost rose to 4.2% from 3.6%. While average returns on government securities remained low due to the low yield environment prevalent in the first half of 2021, in absolute terms, total interest and similar income increased by 26.8 billion, while total expense increased by 36.1 billion, leading to a 9.2 billion decline in interest income. However, we were able to compensate for the drop in the interest expense income with a 65.6% increase in the fees and commission lines. Total deposits increased by 19.2% to 2 trillion from 1.7 trillion in 2020, in line with our guidance for our 2021 full year. The increase was driven by double-digit growth across all product lines, namely demand, savings, and tenured funds. Net risk assets increased by 25.1% to 1.7 trillion from 1.4 trillion in 2020. It's important to note that the combination of bond lending facilities and the impact on foreign currency exchange were responsible for the 31.7% of the absolute growth in the loan book. Non-performing loans ratio dropped by 2.9% from that 3.8% in 2020, which led to improved cost of risk, 2.5 from 1.4% in 2020. Our regulatory ratios remained above the required thresholds, with liquidity ratio of 40.4% and capital adequacy ratio of 20.1%. In line with the guidance issued by the Central Bank of Nigeria, we have commenced the implementation of Basel III and the rendition of returns under the pilot scheme. Our capital adequacy ratio computation under Basel III is well above the required minimum. The Common Equity Tier 1 ratio was 15.5% against a regulatory threshold of 11.25%. Capital adequacy ratio was 20.1% compared to regulatory threshold of 15%. Liquidity coverage ratio was 177.5% compared to a regulatory threshold of 100%. Leverage ratio was 6.4% compared to a regulatory threshold of 4%. I would like to emphasize our total commitment to achieving the long-term strategic objectives of Fidelity Bank PLC. Thank you. We will take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1. We will pause to see if there are questions. The first question comes from Ngozi Odum from Cardinal Stone Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Can you hear me? Can you please confirm you can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you so much for taking my questions. My name is Ngozi Odum from Cardinal Stone. I just wanted to ask a few questions, and I'll take it in batches, if that's all right. First off, what's the strategy around your 40% increase in term deposits, which may have nearly driven the twofold increase we saw in your term deposits cost? Did you also reprice deposits higher to be more competitive in the year? Secondly, I would like to know on your operating expenses, they were relatively more contained versus previous year. Do you expect this to persist, and what's the big influence here? And then speaking to the bank's ability to trade special bills, we've been hearing talks about certain restrictions on the bank's ability to trade special bills the way they would like. Just like to know if there are any such restrictions and how much special bills you are holding and where is this reported in your financial, and also what's the effective CRR. And then lastly, for my first round of questions, based on your internal rating systems, we saw that 10 loans rated below minus double B rose more than 30% during the period. Should this elicit any concerns about the quality of your books and the likelihood of higher ECL charges in FY2022? So I'll pause here. Thank you.
Which is the volume of our special bills? Our special bills as at the end of year was 125 billion sterilized central bank. So I'll have the treasurer speak to the restrictions that we have on the utilization of special bills. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much. My name is Victoria Babalola. Okay, talking on the special bill, yes, when the central bank issued these bills, there were some restrictions in terms of what you can do with it, because it's actually meant to support liquidity and was restricted for outright trading. One of such restrictions is for retail. But since that time, I think the market has been free in using it for every other thing with the exception of repo. So in terms of restriction, we cannot say it's totally are restricted in that manner. Yes, they came with one memo, but they revised it. What is obtainable now is just on the repo side of it. You need to use other bills for the repo transaction. Now, coming to the size of what we have in bills, that's the special bill. We have 135 as of December 2021. Where does it report to? Is under our treasury bills focus, as you can see it in the financials. Thank you.
Let me just talk about the OPEX. I think you mentioned that you saw our OPEX being contained in 2021 compared to the previous year. I mean, it's a very deliberate approach by the bank. We've been working on making sure that we contain our OPEX. And, you know, the fact of what has happened with COVID-19 has also helped a lot in most of the OPEX lines we are seeing coming down. So we are taking advantage of all the learnings from this whole process, and we'll continue to push even in the years ahead to make sure that we will be able to contain our OPEX. So looking forward, that's the direction. The bank is very, very focused on that, and will continue to do that. I know you also asked about effective CRR. Currently, effective CRR is around 32%, and that's what it is. You talked about the strategy on the 40% increase in term deposits.
Yeah, our loan quality remains very strong. I'll see how we'll stick to it. The term loans, yeah.
Thank you very much, Ngozi. Concerning the growth in loans in the bucket rated double B of about 30% that you noticed, I'd like to just reassure you that there's no cause for concern as far as ECL going forward is concerned, because we have a very rigorous loan extension process that looks at the quality of our loan book and the quality of loans that we grant. So it's either we ensure that the structuring is very tight, and overall that helps us to maintain a very strong loan quality, as evidenced by our strong prudential ratios. Thank you.
You mentioned the growth in term deposits. What has happened is that currently, you know, term deposits has about 25% of our total deposit is in term. So what that creates for us an opportunity to manage our needs going forward. The growth you've seen is just normal in the growth of deposits as they come. But we're pricing them reasonably in line with what opportunities are at any particular point in time. So it's not a cause of concern. For us, it's an area that the bank is working on to make sure that in that bucket, we're able to bring it down as much as possible. And as we bring it down, it filters into the CASA level. So if a bank, for instance, has CASA today at 98, 94, so there isn't much you can do. But we have that room, that leverage, because anything we do there, as we work on it, if you pass it to our performance, going forward. So for us, we see that as an opportunity, and we're already working on it to make sure that that is an area we will improve going forward, especially on the deposit rates. Thank you.
Efforts on the growth of the low-cost deposits, because that will go a very long way to moderate the interest rates coming in on term deposits. We have put a lot of efforts towards growing our CASA through the our savings promo that's going on right now, the GEM. And we're also doing quite a bit on the foreign currency deposits. We're pushing very hard to ensure that we get in all of those. That we believe will help with moderating the interest rates on the term deposits. Thank you.
Ngozi, does that answer all of your questions?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Do you have any further questions?
Yes, I do. I'll take them after. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from Duye Makioroki from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for the call and also the brief presentation at the start. I just had a few questions. The first one is, we've seen a trend of, main tier two players and also tier one players embracing a holdco structure to salvage earnings in what we can term a difficult operating environment. How is Fidelity thinking about this and also responding to this? My second question is, in a bid to become a tier one bank, could you please provide some market metrics against your 5-year strategic goal? My third question is, earnings growth in full year 21 was largely supported by lower impairments during the year. In a normalized, what happens in a normalized cost of risk environment, and how much of your book is still under forbearance? Also wanted to get an idea of how Fidelity is thinking about interest rates environment in 2022, seeing a bit of an uplift in projected NIM for full year 22. So just wanted to get an idea of how you're thinking about that. Lastly, could you provide some color on the quarter-on-quarter weakness that we saw in Q4 2021 in the non-interest income lines, particularly fees and commissions and other operating income? Thank you.
Thank you very much for those questions. On the question on the whole call, if Fidelity is what you expect from Fidelity Bank, right now all the options are on the table. We will take advantage of opportunities anywhere we see them. We will not go into holdco just for the sake of it. The venture that we choose must meet our risk acceptance criteria and must make a very strong value proposition. Like we said, all the options are on the table as we progress through the communicate our plans. Thank you.
Speaking to the question you had on the impairments and the fact of our numbers benefiting from a reduction in impairments. Now, you would notice that in 2020 was more like an abnormal year for us. We took significant impairments arising from our expectation on COVID and impact of COVID on our books. Now, 2021, we've seen that normalized somewhat. So yes, we see the cost of risk that we have in 2021 as being more like the normalized form that will continue to sustain us going forward around that range. Worst case scenario, might be just around that range, something like that. That's what we see as normalized going forward. And about how much of our books is still under forbearance? Today it's about 16% that is still under forbearance, and these are largely loans that are under some form of CBN intervention fund-driven loans. About 16% of them, they basically enjoy a reduction in interest rates from what it used to be before COVID, averaging about 9% to something about 5% today. So that's basically what they enjoy, and that's already factored into our projections also for 2022. So I hope that answers the question on the level of impairment and what we see going forward into 2022.
I would also want to bring to your attention the fact that even though we didn't make as much impairment as last year, that you also have to recognize the loss that came from the drop in the NIM. A significant drop of from 6.3% to 4.7% translates to loss of income. And we're able to recover from that. So that shows that when you put everything on the table, that it compensates for the lower impairment that we took. So it's not that our numbers are looking good because we didn't take the impairment, but we're able to cover from all the income lines.
Doya, does that answer all of your questions? Do you have any further questions?
Okay, super. Yes, thank you for clarification on those questions. I also had another one. What is Fidelity's strategy to compete in the payment space? We've seen banks and also, you know, fintechs come into this space quite aggressively. How is Fidelity reacting here?
John, how
does
the chief digital
officer speak to that? Yes, so thank you for that question. With regards to the payments and the fintechs, we are not unmindful of the incursion and the effect it's having on the banking industry as a whole. Fidelity Bank is focused on three key pillars. One is continue to drive its digital strategy, which is yielding fruit today, and it's evident in the adoption of our customers and how we're onboarding them onto our channels. Two, aggressively continue to increase the customers that we have. We're currently at 6.5 and intend to go to about 2 million by the end of the year. But what we understand and what we believe to be the differentiator with the quality of service that we can render, and as such, we're spending an inordinate amount of time designing our processes, making them more customer-centric, and pursuing self-serve as the main strategic thrust. Speaking specifically to fintechs and payments specifically, we constantly explore opportunities to collaborate with them because we think that at the end of the day, an improvement in the overall service quality to the customer will determine where they will spend their money. So to synthesize it down to 2 points, we are enhancing our internal capabilities while at the same time exploring collaboration strategies with these players to improve our service offerings to our customers. Thank you.
Do you have any further questions?
No, that'll be all for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question comes from Mariana Villalba de Oliveira from William Blair & Company. Please go ahead.
Hi, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. Thank you for the presentation in the beginning. First one is about the progress towards Basel III that you touched upon earlier in the call. Could you please disclose what's the capital adequacy ratio and the CET1 ratio under Basel III at the moment, and how does that compare to minimum regulatory levels? Alongside that question, we saw some banks that operate in sub-Saharan Africa issuing AT1s and Tier 2 bonds in the offshore bond market. Is that something that Fidelity would consider? And thinking about euro bonds, you did an issuance last year and you have a 2022 maturity this year. Understanding that the bond last year was pre-financing for this year's maturity, is it still the plan to pay for that bond with cash in hand? And my final question would be on net interest margin. There was last year the bank reported a miss in terms of the its guidance. I'd like to understand a bit how confident you are you can meet that range between 5% and 6%, and what would be the key drivers for NIM improvement this year.
Okay, thank you very much for your question on the on our Basel II ratios. Straight to the answer, right now our CET1 is at 15.5% and the minimum is 11.25%. So we are well above that regulatory minimum. You also spoke about Tier 2. We currently have local currency Tier 2 bond running. Are we looking to issue another in the near term? That depends on what the market looks like. AT1 is definitely an option that is also open to us, and we'll consider it depending on what our needs are. But basically, from a strict Tier 1 perspective, we are very much above the regulatory minimum, and our sensitizations could show that we will continue to operate at that level going forward. Thank you.
Then it does, in addition to what Isiaro have said on the questions on Basel III, we are very comfortable with the position on C1 of 15.5. In addition to that, another two fundamental ratios under Basel III, under the leverage ratio, we are currently on 6.4 against the 4% regulatory deadline, minimum rate. Then on liquidity coverage ratio, which is also very key for an institution, we are on 177% against the regulatory limit of 100%. So we are very comfortable with our capital buffer.
Okay, so I need to answer your question regarding NIMs. I think you expressed some concern if we are confident about meeting our guidance on NIMs in this 2022. I will say yes to that because we have opportunities. If you look at our P&L, you will see what's happening on interest expense. There's a lot of room for us to do so much on interest expense. The bank has set out a strategy to move our deposit mix more positively towards low-cost deposits. So as we do that, which is currently going on, so what we're seeing is that that is dropping off. So the level of growth we saw between last year, that's 2020 and 2021, on interest expense will not happen. So we have currently 25% of our deposit in high-cost term deposits as at year-end. So any work we do there, filters into helping us to achieve the level of guidance we are giving on this. So we're quite positive on that, and we believe that the work we're going to do there will help us to achieve that. So that's the additional need to make on this. Thank you.
Mariana, do you have any further questions?
Just to follow up, I think there was one question that I didn't quite get an answer. It is about the Eurobonds maturing later this year, the 2022's 400 million. Is it the plan to still pay for that with cash on hand? Or what's the dollar liquidity at the moment, and what's the strategy there?
That would be a yes. We have a sinking fund already for that payment when it falls due. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tunde Ogunleye from SBG Securities. Please go ahead, Tunde.
Good afternoon, team. Thank you for the conference call and thank you for taking my question. I think my first question is around your net gain from your trading book. I'd probably like to know what is driving the gain, and are we expecting that momentum to continue into 2022, and also if you could probably share your outlook on the FX environment. Second question is to know what is driving the growth in your debt instruments at amortized cost. It seems to have increased year on year from what it was in 2020. and also your derivative financial asset was up by 7x. I would like to know what is driving that growth and what percentage of this is TBN swap related. And if you could also shed more light on what is driving the 67.2% growth in your special cash reserve. My next set of questions is on asset quality. On your loan guidance, you guided 10 to 15%. I'd probably like to know in what sector you are seeking to expand your loan book. And also, when I look at your stage 2 loans, it seems to have grew from what it was in previous year. I would like to know what is driving the growth in your stage 2 loans. And also, your individual NPL ratio has also increased from what it was in previous year. It increased from 7% to 10%. So I would like to know what was driving the NPLs in the individual segment. And also NPLs in also in the real estate segment too as well. I would also like to know what is driving that. The final one is my own strategy. You've mentioned that you are planning to become a Tier 1 bank in 2025. Are you considering any acquisition plan, probably in the near to medium term? And how are you positioning yourself against threats from the fintech? And the final one on strategy is just for you to probably share more light on the nature of your partnership with OnePipe. Since you have partnered with OnePipe to create a paygate solution. So I probably want to know what was the consideration for this partnership? Is it a profitability split? And if so, what's the percentage? I'll pause here for now. Thank you.
Well, I don't know. Repeat the question, please. Your voice was cracking. Especially the early part.
Okay, so let me just take it bit by bit so that you can probably get it. The first set of questions is around your net gains from your trading book. Are you expecting some to continue into 2022? And what is your outlook on FX? And what is driving the growth in your debt instruments at amortized cost? Your derivative asset was up by 7x. What is driving that growth? And what percentage of this is TBN swap related? And if you could also shed more light on what is driving the growth in your special cash reserve, it was up by 67.2% year on year.
I'll take the question on the debt in the trading book. The growth in the trading book. So we didn't hear you very well. Try to put the questions together.
Okay, are we expecting the momentum in your trading book to continue this year? And what's your outlook on FX?
Okay, thanks very much.
Asking what you asked, so you're sure you are speaking to this question. Yes, first of all, ask me this what you asked.
Okay.
Was your question?
Okay, yes, I think I heard your question on the net gain that we have in the trading book and if it's going to be sustained this year as it is. As you are aware, you know, trading, it comes with the market volatility. And if you have some good positions before market changes, clearly you will take the advantage. Depending on which type of trading that you have. So that is just actually coming from the valuation gains that we have coming from our position. Will it be sustained this year? Yes, our strategy is still very important. We are hoping the market, we are watching the market so closely, and we believe that we can still sustain this in the current year. Talking about derivatives, yes, we saw some growth in the derivative there. Basically, the major one that you have here is just an NDF that we bought on a transaction of about 49 to 50 million dollars. I think the other one that seemed close to that is the transaction that though has closed this year, which is about 22.1 billion in Naira equivalent. That's about 51.2 million. But that has actually been closed this year. But after that period, yes, it was there. Thank you.
I think please confirm that one of your questions is that we should speak to one of the sectors of the area of our loan growth.
Yes, please.
Okay, fine. What we saw was a very strong recovery post-COVID. Fine. The question was on the sectors of our loan growth in the year 2021. And I was responding to the question by saying that we saw a lot of growth on infrastructure, renewal, we saw a lot of growth in manufacturing, we saw a lot of growth in the agricultural sector, We saw a lot of growth in the diversification through our non-oil exports. We also saw a lot of growth in the health sector. We also saw a lot of growth in information and technology, in transport and logistics, as well as general commerce, which is our strength. And I was trying to deepen the conversation around infrastructure growth. What you would notice is that the government has a trust towards infrastructure renewal, and we keep into it. We have, because of the decay and deficit over the years, the government focused on increasing spending on roads, railways, and waterways, and we keep into all of those. So we have several projects running, both the PPP and the direct funding by the government. So that's a major area of growth for us in 2021, and it's going to go into continue into 2022. So we've done a lot of the agri sector, and we're very early comers in the export space. We play very strongly there. So going into 2022, we're going to go on to the next level of export and agriculture, which is value addition, which is exactly what the central bank is speaking to right now. We have early commerce advantage. We've done in very well on the cash crops. Now the next level is to capacitize them into next level, which is the value addition, to also key into the incentives by the central bank on the race to 2,200 billion non-export earnings. So that's where it is now. So that explains our growth, our double-digit growth on the loan side. Thank you.
Okay. Let me speak to the question on asset quality. And you had a question about the growth in the Stage 2 loans. That's one of the questions. Now, the answer to that is that this has been from a recovery from our Stage 3 loans. You may remember that 2020, 2021, we had the impact of COVID. We had growth in Stage 3 loans. And then, 2020. And then 2021, we're seeing a recovery. So you will notice that the total Stage 3 loans reduced from 53 billion in 2020 to close at 50 billion in 2021. That's speaking to the improvement. And that reduction is going into Stage 2 and Stage 1. So it's basically a reflection of an improvement in the loan book itself. Now, on the growth in Stage 3 loans for the individual buckets of our loan book, the consumer loan bucket of our loan book, this was basically an abnormality that occurred in 2021. We had a glitch in a technical glitch in a third party provider of settlement services for customers that we gave individual loans to. So basically, what this third party does is to aggregate repayments on a monthly basis and remit once that payment is due. Now, there was a glitch that lasted a few months, covered altogether about 4 months actually, and that basically was in the last quarter of 2021. Now, it hindered the ability of that third party provider to remit those funds to us, and that led to this buildup of Stage 3 loans. I'm happy to report anyway that that has been resolved, and we've seen that technical glitch corrected. And you'll see that it was resolved in December. You'll see the effect in January going forward. It's an abnormality, and you will not see this kind of NPLs repeat, because since then we've strengthened the monitoring of those kind of loans. Once this kind of thing happens, it will not go beyond Stage 2 maximum before we need it to the board. So basically, it's an isolated thing that happened in 2021, and we don't see that repeating itself going forward. Thank you.
I believe one of the questions that Tunde asked with regards to a partnership that we have with OneLife, and I want to just speak to that topic on the discuss something I had said previously about our strategy as an organization with regards to payments and fintechs.
had said that what we were going to do was continue to increase capacity and seek collaboration opportunities. This partnership is one of such opportunities that led to the launch of our PayGate Plus platform. Essentially, it is a payments platform that we enhance capability working with OnePipe and collaborating to make that platform more robust, extending its functionality, and of course diversifying the options by which payments can be processed. So we upscale its capacity by giving it our virtual account services. We're able to provide payment links. We're able to support buy now pay later initiatives. We're able to support direct debits and point transfers and card-based processing, just to name a few. So I think just to give it in context, it's consistent with our position with regards to payments and seeking collaboration opportunities. Thank you.
I believe there was a question on the outlook of the FX rate. Okay, so our answer to that is that we think the central bank has done very well in boosting FX inflows into the economy, which has helped to manage the pressure on the Naira. For instance, the extension of the Naira for dollar incentive scheme, the RT200 FX program that's just been launched, as well as the ban on the BDC operations, which boosted FCY inflows into the country. And that had positive impact on the reserves. And as you can see, given the current prices of crude oil and improving crude production, with an average of 1.5 million barrels a day in 2021, we believe the CBN will continue to support the Naira against the dollar in the short term, especially in the official market. And we have seen a lot of efforts on the export side and the increase of dollar inflows from the export and the support that the central bank is giving to it. So we believe that, yes, it's a challenge, but it will continue to be stable to some extent in the near future. I'm not sure I answered all your questions, because we actually struggled to hear the questions. Is there anyone that you want to remind us of?
Yes, please. I wanted to know if there's any acquisition plan in the near to medium term. And then also, what was driving the growth in debt instruments at amortized cost? And the growth we saw in your cash reserve as well, the special cash reserve, if you could shed more light on what is driving that growth. And are we expecting any repricing of your loan book going into 2022? In 2022, sorry.
Right, the only thing I have heard is the acquisition plan, and that will also be that all cards on the table were opportunistic. We'll review every situation that comes to us depending on what the market realities are. But for now, our strategy is organic growth. Right. To grow organically along the lines of our strategy that we have shared with the markets before now.
Tunde, do you have any further questions?
I think some of my questions has not been answered. So the one on the debt instrument at amortized cost. So I want to know what was responsible for that growth and the growth we saw in special cash reserve. What was driving that growth as well? So those are the final two questions.
Sorry, I just want to clarify around this debt instrument at amortized cost. Are you talking of the euro bond? Are you talking of the federal government instrument that we're holding? Or on lending?
Okay, when I look at your balance sheet position, I noticed some decline and some increase. So I saw the debt instruments at amortized cost. There's a line item there under your investment securities that speak to it. So there was a significant increase from what it used to be in previous year. So that was what I was asking, what drove that growth?
That must be the euro bond that we issued in October 2021, $400 million.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question comes from Konstantin Rozantsev from JP Morgan. Please go ahead, Konstantin.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much for hosting the call. I've got three questions that I wanted to ask. The first one, I think you mentioned earlier on the call that the fraction of the loans which are subject to moratoriums is about 16%, 1.6. So I just wanted to, you might have addressed this already, but could you please speak to the risks in that affected portfolio? Do you expect much of that portfolio to be recovered and not impact the credit costs, the P&L of the bank? The second question is about the Stage 2 loans bucket. So you're reporting that in this bucket you have about 18.5% of the total loan portfolio. Could you please speak to the risks that you see in this bucket, and also how conservative you see the coverage of Stage 2 loans? You currently show it at 8%. How conservative is that in your view? And lastly, could you please mention what's the net open FX position of the bank combined on and off balance sheet in FX? Thank you.
We have approximately 16% of our loan book were intervention loans and under forbearance rate of 5%. And I think you wondered whether there was any credit risk to those loans. Those forbearance were given not because the loans were bad, but because the government gave a forbearance because of the COVID situation. COVID has since passed, and we have seen a lot of recovery in our customer businesses. If you see from our numbers, we have seen a lot of growth and a lot of revenue from customer activity, which means that customer activity has returned back to normal. We do not anticipate any problems when this forbearance is over, because we have seen strong growth in the activities within the customer businesses, and that has translated to income for us, even on the income side. So I'll get my hand, my CRO, speak a little more about that.
Okay, thank you very much, Constantine. Just taking on from where my MD has spoken to, we actually think that the risks from this sector is very, very well contained, given that these are largely loans to sectors that are very crucial to the economy. They're enjoying single-digit interest rate, much reduced from what it was. They are currently meeting all repayment obligations. I think what the central bank has just done is basically to just give more time. So from a risk perspective, we are not concerned about these loans. We believe that at the end of this further extension, which basically just focuses on reduced interest rates. There's no moratorium now on principal repayment. There's no moratorium now on interest. Interest is running, just that it's running at a lower rate than what would have been pre-COVID. So we really don't have concerns about them. And we believe they are all very recoverable. You notice that the loans that we restructured before now we had 32% of our loan book, now it's down to 16%. All of this, the reduction has just been because we've had repayments in line with the restructure. And all that is reflecting in the overall portfolio quality that we have, the NPL ratio at 2.9%. So basically, we see the trend has been positive. On the stage two loans coverage, yes, we are comfortable at this level. The overall coverage is 128.3% on stage three loans overall. So we remain comfortable, and I think these are an improvement over what we had in the last 2 years. So basically, from our perspective, we're comfortable. And we'll continue to monitor monitor that ratio going forward. Now, on the NOP position, I'll call on Treasurer Akin to speak to that.
Okay, thanks very much. As regards the NOP position, if you look at the balance sheet and you look at the gap between the FCY assets and the liability, you see $345 million long position there. And that shows the strengths that we have, and also in terms of the ability to meet the number of obligations. To also further give it a clarity, the total asset is about 2.3 Out of this 2.3, that 2.9% of it, which represent about 700, which represent about 743 billion in naira terms, relates to cash and short-term investments. I don't know if that actually speaks to your question.
Constantine, does that answer your questions?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just another reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one. And just a note for the people that have queued for a question, if you could please keep your questions to three at a time. The next question comes from Vinod Surendran from AllianceBernstein. Please go ahead, Vinod. Vinod, you may proceed with your question.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, you are. Your volume is a little bit low, so if I may just ask if you could please just speak up.
Sure, thank you. My question was specifically with the dollar balance sheet. We have seen the dollar position, especially the dollar cash in hand, has reduced compared to June 2021. I would have assumed that post October 2021 400 million bond issuance, the dollar cash would have increased. So, could you please give more clarity on what was the usage of the dollar bond issuance? And what are your plans to refinance the October 2022 dollar bond?
So, I just want to confirm that your question is for us to tell you how if we're ready for the repayment of the Eurobond for October 2022.
What are your plans? I mean, how are you planning to repay it? I mean, are you going to refinance it via an external issuance or through internal cash?
No, we don't have any plans to refinance the bond. Where, like I answered earlier on, there was an initial question on that, that we have a sinking fund that we've put together and we're all ready to make the payments to repayment in October 2022. We intend to pay back the bond. Thank you. At maturity.
Right. Just on the use of proceeds from the dollar bond, could you please explain what were the use of proceeds?
I tell you very well, you asked about the use of proceeds on the 400 million that we raised in October last year, right? If that is this, if you look at the guidance that we gave and you look at the prospectus, we said, it's actually to support our trade transactions. That's basically what we want the money for. We wanted the money for, and we've been deploying that since that time. Thank you.
Vinod, do you have any further questions?
Actually, I have one more question. Could you also give us a forecast for the USD Naira rate by year end?
Unfortunately, we have just lost Vinod's line. If he could please just reconnect to ask his question again. In the meantime, we will move on to the next question. The next question comes from Nick Dimitrov from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead, Nick.
Hi there. Good afternoon. A couple of questions. I gotta say, most of my questions have been answered, but I just want to make sure that I understood correctly. So the bonds that mature in October 22 will be just repaid, right? They don't need to be refinanced. I just want to clarify this. And then the second thing is, I didn't quite get your net FX position. I think Constantine asked that question. I think I got that you're long, net long dollars, but can you quantify the position? Thank you.
So the answer to your first question is an absolute yes. We are going to repay bonds, the bondholders in October 2022.
Okay, yeah, so the net dollar position, if you wanted to get a clarity, it's mentioned that we are net positive at $345 million. Dollars. But if you, they will have some receivables expected that makes up that number. So if you're looking strictly at the notes, one of the notes in the financial, you probably will see something much lower. But the combination of the two, that will give you a forward receivable, that will give you the figure of $345. That's what our position is.
I'm sorry, just the last number, 425, you broke up for a second.
I think $345 million, that's what I said, $345 million.
$345, got it, excellent. All right,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up question from Konstantin Rozantsev. Please go ahead, Konstantin.
Thank you for taking my follow-up. I just wanted to confirm on the Basel III implementation in Nigeria. So my understanding is that the central bank still provides some lenience towards the banks in meeting the regulatory minimums introduced alongside Basel III. And so temporarily, you know, there is an allowance not to be formally in compliance. I think from the recent guidance I got from another bank until May of this year. So could you please confirm what's the regulator's outlook on this? And since what point in time would the formal compliance with those minimums be strictly required?
Okay. As I'm not aware, the central bank is giving any guarantees on the Basel III. The pilot scheme has just started, and our numbers are very strong. I will have the CRO speak to it.
Okay, thank you, Konstantin. Indeed, we are currently in a parallel run situation between Basel II and Basel III. So, there are there's no leniency of any kind from the CBN. Basically, what they're doing now is asking banks to send in their ratios on a monthly basis. It's going to run for an initial period of 6 months, and then likely to be extended for another 3 months, depending on what they see. And once that parallel run is over, then we will kick into the they'll come out with a final guideline or final kick-off date, so to speak. Now, in terms of the minimums, of course, we told you about the C1, 2.5%, and we are currently at 15.5%. On capital adequacy ratio, it is 15%, 20.1%. On liquidity coverage ratio, it is 100% minimum. We have 177.5. Then we have 4% minimum, and we have 6.4%. So that's basically what we are tracking over the next during the parallel run period. And then after that, we'll wait for further guidance from the regulator. So there's no question of whether there's a linear thing.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Konstantin, do you have any further questions or is that it?
No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is another follow-up question from Vinod Surendran. Please go ahead, Vinod.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, you are, Vinod. May I just ask that you can just speak up and just so that we can hear your question clearly. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, just a follow-up on the earlier question. I was looking at the dollar balance sheet, and the outstanding net exposure on the dollar side is Naira 5.9 billion. Could you please help me how it reconciles with an outstanding position of $345 million?
we are struggling to tell you, is it possible to have a investor relations manager? And we are going to respond to you.
My question was regarding the net dollar position. If I look at the balance sheet, the dollar balance sheet, the net dollar position that I see is Naira 5.9 billion. Could you help me how it reconciles with the amount that you just mentioned, which was $345 million?
Okay, so if I may answer that, the MDCO has said that we have an NOP position of $345 million. The EGI also mentioned that if you look at the dollar balance sheets, you may not be able to see that amount, but there is a leg, there's an FCY forward of receivables that is not currently showing in the FS risk balance sheet that you see in the AFS. So by the time you adjust for the receivable, you will have the $345 million as NOP, as at the end of 2021.
Thank you very much. At this time, we have no further questions in the queue. Nneka, can I hand back to you for closing remarks?
I want to thank you all for participating in this call. Over the years, Fidelity has reported very strong growth across all indices. We will sustain the current performance trend and deliver a very strong set of results for the year 2022. And just to tell you that if you have further questions or you need additional information, then please reach out to the investor relations team. Thank you and have a very good day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you very much for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.